You must have heard the phrase Tattvamasi that thou art. Tattvamasi that thou art. What do we mean by that? This has been talked before by other teachers when it refers to the Bhagavad Gita, but just to briefly summarize, the teacher tells the student that consciousness, that Bhagavan, that God that you think is far away, is not far from you, but you are that, Tvam Asi, thou art, you are that. And we'll talk about this more today, that God is not somebody separate or far from us, but is our own self. And so that understanding is covered in the entire Bhagavad Gita. The first six chapters talk about thou, Tvam, that is me, us, who are we? So the first six chapters tell us how we should live our life, do karma yoga, service, and all that. So that is the first six chapters. And chapters 7 to 12 talk about God, Bhagavan, that God, that consciousness which we think far away is my own self, my own nature. And then 13th to 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita talk about the relationship, how I and that God can become one, what is the process and where God is. So all that is explained in the 18 chapters. And I think others, we have covered this before in the Gita class, but today's three shlokas are very interesting. They also cover Tattvamasi, that consciousness you are. That is what is covered in these three verses. So the entire, this Upanishad mantra, that Tattvamasi, this very famous mantra, will be covered in today's verses. So it is a wonderful opportunity for us to understand that mantra, how I can be that. And as we have studied so far, after telling us about the technique of meditation, the obstacles, last week we heard from Bhagavan Sri Krishna the joy experienced by a meditator, by an enlightened sage, how he atyantikam sukham, the joy that he experiences, paramananda, it is the highest joy, sukham uttamam, all those adjectives Bhagavan uses to tell us that if you want to experience that highest joy, experience it within. Joy in objects is fleeting. So today let us cover these three verses which tell us that having now meditated, what does the meditator experience? What is his life and how does he then conduct his life? Very, very beautiful verses. So verse number 29, chapter 6, verse number 29. Sarva bhutastham atmanam. Sarva bhutani chatmani. Ikshate yoga yuktatma. Sarvatra samadarshanaha. Sarva bhutastham atmanam. Sarva bhutani chatmani. Ikshate yoga yuktatma. Sarvatra samadarshanaha. So, what is the experience of this meditator? I or us, as we evolve in this. So, sarva bhutastham atmanam. Atma here means the consciousness, Om. Is everybody familiar with this chart? Nobody is unfamiliar. So this Atma, the Om, the consciousness, Sarva Bhutastham. Sarva Bhuta means all beings. Beings means not only human beings, but animals, birds, plants, fish, all living beings. Sarva Bhutastham. Stham means established. This Atma, this consciousness, I. That I, because I think of myself as this body, but the teachers tell us your true nature is I, that consciousness. So that consciousness, sarva bhutastham atmanam, all in all beings, this atma, this consciousness is stationed, is established. And sarva bhutani, and all beings, cha means and atmani, in the self. So here the self is not somebody separate, but my own nature. So this consciousness that is established in me, in that consciousness all beings reside. So there is only one consciousness, there is only one atma. It's not that my atma is different from yours or yours. There is a jivatma, which is the transmigratory soul, but the consciousness, the essential nature, om, is one in all beings. There is only one. And you can call that Brahman, you can call that Father in heaven, you can call it Allah, you can call it that total consciousness that is one and that is reflecting in all different beings. So this life principle is there in every being. So all beings are in that Atma. This Atma is in all beings and all beings are in this Atma, but that Atma is me, is not separate from me. Sarva bhutastam atmanam, sarva bhutani cha atmani, ikshate yoga yukta atma. Ikshate means he sees. Who sees? Yoga yukta. Yoga yukta means one who is established in this knowledge and has meditated in meditation, dhyana yoga. This individuality, atma, sarvatra, everywhere samadarshana. Then he sees the same. Equanimity everywhere. Because when everybody is that one Atma, then how can I have any distinction or differences? So, all in me, when the Mahatma says all in me, it is not an egoistic statement. It's not that I am God, but I am the consciousness that is my true nature. And not only I am in that consciousness, the whole universe is. Everything is in that one consciousness. And I am not separate from this consciousness. So all are in me. And that is what we have to practice, that when we sit down, not only for meditation, but when you're looking around and you say that this consciousness, that is my true nature. If I am that consciousness, then that one consciousness is everywhere. Then everything is in that consciousness and that consciousness is in everything. So what does that mean? Everybody is divine. All are divine. There is nobody who is not divine. Yes, some of the divinity is covered by negative vasanas, and because of that they have negative actions, negative thoughts. And we all to some extent have this covering of these vasanas over our divinity. So the extent of evolution of an individual is to the extent his vasanas become less and he becomes more and more one with that consciousness. So the Lord within shines as we reduce our selfishness, reduce our vasanas, the Lord within us shines, and then you understand, oh, I am divine. I am not unholy. I am not a creature of sin, but I am a holy being. But this cannot be, even though right now we are talking about it, we are discussing it, but cannot be understood by the intellect. Intellectually, right now we say, oh, I have understood, I am divine. But we don't have that true understanding, that true experience. Right now, when I'm saying we are all divine, it is Swami Chinmayananda's teaching, you know, from this textbook. Or it is Ved Vyasji's teaching, or it is Bhagavan Sri Krishna's teaching who was giving it to Arjuna. It is not your and my understanding because we have not reached that state of evolution. So the intellect can take us to a point, but then beyond that, you have to go beyond the intellect. The intellect cannot reach that highest state of enlightenment. They say, well, then why should we do it? Because that is the only equipment we have. Only equipment we have given to us is intellect. The mind is emotions. The body cannot see. God cannot be seen by eyes, cannot be thought of, but can be experienced as within, as I. So the intellect will take us to a point, and then in your meditation, you transcend the intellect and then you reach. So intellect is the only equipment. Like the mouth is the only equipment for the baby. Right now, the baby is crawling. She's crawling. She's 4, 5, 6 months. I don't know what age do they start crawling. I forget now, but 6 months or 7 months. And so she's crawling, and the only equipment for her is mouth, right? So everything they put in the mouth, any dirt in the mouth, any paper in the mouth, pin in the mouth. As a gastroenterologist, I have removed pins, I have removed sharp needles, so many things, magnets. You know, people, I don't know how these kids get into all these things. And so they swallow everything, and then we have to go and take it out. So for that baby, the only equipment, because what she knows, because milk, see, she drinks the milk. So for her, or eats food. So anything she wants to experience, what it is, she puts it in the mouth. So same way for us, the only equipment we have is the intellect. But this, what Swami Chinmayananda says, that once in your meditation, you experience this oneness with this reality, this Brahman, that I am that, then it is very easy to see outside. One way is you can say, okay, everything is God. Next verse we'll talk about everything is God. I see God everywhere. That is good. Or you say, I see God within. And once you experience that and you have clearly seen that, then it becomes very easy. But for that, the right knowledge is very important, the right understanding, the right communication. The teacher has to communicate this knowledge, which is beyond the intellect, to a student who's trying to use the intellect. So proper communication is very important. This reminds me of a story. I don't know if I told this or not, but there was this brother who was living in New York, and two brothers were living together, and one of them moved to Los Angeles. And the brother who moved to Los Angeles had a very dear cat that he loved, but he had to leave her in New York because there was no place in Los Angeles for the cat. So he left her, and after 2-3 months, he got an email from the brother in New York. Your cat was on the roof. They were in one of the suburbs, not in Manhattan. And so your cat was up on the roof, and she tripped and fell, and she died. So he got a shock, you know, because this was his dear cat. He had been seeing her with him for 10 years. And he wrote back to he called his brother. He says, you know, that's a horrible way. You just told me my cat fell off and died. I got a shock. I almost had a heart attack. So, well, I'm sorry. That's what happened. He says, that's not how you do it. You should have told me an email first. Your cat was on the roof and we are trying to get her down. Your cat is on the roof. And then second day, you should have sent an email. Your cat fell off the roof, but we took her to the vet. And she will recover. And third day, you could have sent an email, sorry, your cat didn't make it, and your cat died. So that's the way, you know, you gently break it. You don't shock somebody like that. It was terrible. I couldn't sleep all night. So brother says, okay, I got it. I'm sorry. After 2 months, brother in New York sends an email, grandma is on the roof, and we are trying to get her down. Proper communication. So you have to clearly explain what you intend. And that's the goal of all these teachings. The teachers are trying to teach us what is this highest truth in our own language. Just as when you talk to a child, you don't talk to them, you know, with high words. You talk to them in language they can understand. A 5 or a 6 year old, you don't tell him a squared equals b squared, a square of the hypotenuse. No, you tell them that in a triangle, you know, one side is long, you know, so you talk to them in simple words. Now, seeing this divinity, there is a very beautiful story of Yudhishthira. I'm sure most of you have heard it. The story of the dog, has everybody heard? No? Okay, it's a very nice story. So the Pandavas, after they had ruled the kingdom for many years, and after they had defeated the Kauravas, then they got old, and so they gave the kingdom to their grandson, Parikshit, Abhimanyu's son. And so the 5 Pandavas with Draupadi, all 6 of them were very old by then. And so they said, we need to give up our body. So they went and meditated for a while in the forest. And when the final time came, they knew that our final time has come. They said, we all need to walk towards heaven. So they were going to physically walk to heaven. I guess they had that much spiritual power. So they started walking. So there was a mountain, this Meru mountain that they were climbing. And so as the mountain was very steep, Draupadi fell first. But what Yudhishthir found, there was a dog that was accompanying them right from the beginning. From where this dog came, he didn't know. From somewhere he appeared. So the dog was walking behind. So they said, let him walk. So Draupadi fell. She couldn't walk. Then Sahadev, Nakul, they all fell and they passed away where they were. They were old anyway. Arjuna fell. Even Bhim, the mighty Bhim, also fell. And Yudhishthir, because he had great spiritual power, he kept on walking up all the way to the top of the mountain and he reached the gate of heaven. And this dog was with him. Still, the dog didn't fall. So the Dwarpala, the guard went to Indra very quickly. You know what? Yudhishthir is here, the great Yudhishthir, the one who was... Can you close it fully, please? The one who was the symbol of, you know, truth and purity, that great Yudhishthir is here. Let's go. So Indra comes running to receive him because, I mean, for him, the gates of heaven are always open. And so he said, oh, Yudhishthir, you are here. Welcome. Come, enter. We are so happy to have you here. Because Yudhishthir was a very noble soul throughout his life. So as he entered, the dog was following through the gate. So Indra said, wait. Dog cannot come. No dogs are allowed. No dogs. Humans can enter. If dog wants to enter heaven, he has to give up this life, go through all his yonis, become a human. Then and only then he can enter heaven. So sorry, you have to leave the dog outside. Yudhishthir said, this dog came with me all the way, this whole trip. I don't care where he came from. Dogs are not allowed. If you want the dog to enter, you cannot enter heaven. If you want, you have to enter alone and leave the dog behind. If you want the dog, then you also go. He said, if this dog doesn't go with me, I'm not coming either. I'm going. I'll go anywhere, but I won't enter heaven if my dear... And he walked out. He turned around. He said, close the gates. I'm leaving. He turned around. And as he started walking, the dog became Yamaraj, Dharmaraj, his father. He was testing him to see how much, you know. So the point was that Yudhishthir could see that in this dog also, there is a divinity. And that is what we have to learn from this, that there is a divinity in all creatures, whether dogs, cats, birds, fish, you know, everybody, plants. So we learn to respect all, love all. And also, killing an animal for my food is forbidden. It's wrong, because then this same divinity that is there in me is also in that animal. And if I'm killing that animal for me to eat, then that is also wrong. And the idea is that just as a person who knows electricity, now, if when he sees a bulb, he might see a huge bulb like you see on the stadium, or he might see a small night light, or he might see a blue light or a green light or a yellow light or a red light. But he knows there is one electricity through all. Once you know electricity, you know all electrical appliances, everything. So same way, once you know the Atma within, then you know the Atma everywhere. Then you know that there is one Atma, and then everybody is a manifestation. Just as electricity is playing through all these instruments, so my beloved Lord or this Atma is playing through all beings. And just as a dreamer, when he's dreaming and when he wakes up, then he realizes that in his ignorance he was dreaming. So same way, you and I at this moment are in this world which we think is very real. But when you wake up to that higher reality, then you realize that this world was just a dream and I was playing a part. So that we have talked many times. And how do we see this knowledge? So they said with the third eye of wisdom. That's why in Lord Shiva's picture, you always see a third eye. You know, the Gyan Chakshu. We all have this third eye, but it is closed. This Gyana Chakshu means this eye of knowledge. So we only have these two fleshy eyes to see from. But a wise person, through his eye of wisdom, it does not mean that there is an eye that starts growing, but through his eye of wisdom, he or she is able to see the Atma everywhere, the consciousness. So that's why in the meditation, they always talk about opening the third eye, and that's the Gyan Chakra, you know, the Agnya Chakra, what they call. So there are the six chakras. So the Agnya Chakra is the one that is the focus of knowledge. And there is a very famous saying in Bhagavad Gita, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmani Gavi Hastini Shunicha Shvapakecha Pandita Samadarshina. So when we say all are divine, so Pandit means a wise person. Suppose there are five things in front of him. There is a Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahman. There is a Brahman. There is a very learned person. Brahman does not mean the caste, but a learned person who has knowledge and humility. Vidya Vinaya Sampanne. See, most people, when they get knowledge, they get arrogant. But this wise person has knowledge and humility. Then there is a cow. There is a she-elephant and there is a dog. And the fifth one is a dog eater, you know, one who kills dog and eats. So that is considered to be a very low kind of individual who would eat dogs. So he sees all five in front of them. He sees the same in all. He sees God in all of them, whether it's the Brahman or whether it's the dog or the elephant or the cow or even the lowest human being. That does not mean that he treats everybody equal. It does not mean, you know, that the wise Brahman comes, he will, you know, wash his feet, call him to the house, give him some food respectfully. If a dog comes, he's not going to wash the dog's feet and say, oh, Paramatma dog, Maharaja Pandarao. No, he knows, okay, dog, yeah, he will give him some food and very respectfully send him away, but he's not going to. So he treats people based on what they are treated, need to be treated, but he sees God in all. It does not mean that if there is a man or a woman, he says, I don't know whether you are a man or woman, I only see Krishna. No, he can tell, okay, this is a man, this is a woman, this is a tree, this is a dog. But each one needs to be treated with love and divinity. So like wave, you know, how Atma can be in the self, like wave is in the water, right? Wave is in the water. And where is the water? Water is in the wave. So wave is in the water, water is in the wave. So that means Atma is in the being and all beings are in Atma. So it's the same translation, you understand? I'm trying to give various examples to kind of make this concept clear. And the idea how this individual treats all, it's like, how do I treat my body? Now, do I love my finger more than my eye or more than my foot? No. I love all equally. My finger is as important as my eye, as my foot, as every part of my body, my mouth, every part of my body is important. And I love all parts equally. Even if one part, you know, has some ulcer, very painful ulcer in my foot, and the doctor says, we have tried all medicine, it's not going to work, I need to cut it off. It's very painful, it's causing a lot of pain. No, I don't want it cut. You cannot cure? Okay, I'll go to homeopathy. Or I'll go to alternative medicine, or I'll go to Ayurveda. I'll try anything and everything to say, even though that foot is giving me pain, it is me. It is my foot. It is me. So similarly, for a wise person, all beings are the same. Even those that give him pain, he still loves them. And that is the difference between us and a saint, because we are very selective. I love this one. I don't like this one. But for a saint, even the one giving him, torturing him or punishing him, or harassing him, he still has love. So that is the universal love of this individual who has understood that all beings are in me as the Atma, as the consciousness. So that is very hard. Yeah. I can't say all of them are in me. You know, I'm only here. You mean all the stars are in me, all the planets are in me? I don't understand that. Bhagavan, can you make it simpler? Please make it a little easier. That's too hard. All those examples you gave, but still not easy. Bhagavan says, okay, do you agree that all beings are in God? Say, yeah, that I have no problem. This fan is in God, the star is in God. Yeah, that, why didn't you say that first? That would have been easier. Bhagavan says, okay, I'll make it easy for you. So the next verse, he makes it easy for us, where he says, God is in everything and everything is in God. That is easier for us to understand.